All right, folks, welcome back to another, you know what it is, Mountain West. This one's football. That's right. Not basketball. Today's football. Me and Matt here. We're in the off season. There's football news to be had, right, Matt? Just a little bit here and there, but nothing. Games are done. But we're going to talk about what we also talk about, which is fun, nonsense. And we got some news, right? We got some rumors going around, too.
Yeah, it's been a steady stream of kind of player movement news, and the movement being that a lot of people are deciding to come back one last go around.
That's always good here. But I want to get to this. Right before we recorded, I was like, hey, maybe we should give some props like Josh Allen, former Cowboy, going to the AFC title game. Do you think the Bills have a chance versus the Chiefs really quick? Not that we neither follow NFL super closely.
If the defense plays as well as they did against Baltimore, absolutely.
No kidding. I saw that. That pick six, that was wild. But I'm watching here on loop right now because I didn't watch any of the Chiefs-Browns games. Like, whatever, Chiefs-Browns. Rashard Higgins. Oh. The f fumble in the back of the t touch touchback or end zone is the stupidest role in football. He dives to make a play. The pylon cam's amazing to watch. He just loses it like literally, what, 6 inches from the end zone, Matt?
Well, okay, well, how different is it from like throwing an interception in the end zone? Like, that's a touchback. Like, how are you going to treat that any different?
We ain't getting this now. Are we, you're against the rule?
You know what? I've seen a lot of people say how much they hate that rule,
The
but then
fumble's
like
more egregious, I think.
it's just like, if you have any kind of turnover in the end zone, then you have to change every single rule with that in mind. If a defensive back intercepts something in the end zone and then takes a knee, are you going to put them in the 1 yard line too, or like how is that going to work?
You could penalize the offense and put it back to like the 10 or something. And I'm just thinking on the fly here. It's just it's I the interception's different. The pick, you make a play, but off like when you dive and stretch it out and it goes out of bounds, maybe not the one, but pushing back a few yards, I don't know. It's not we don't have to make that decision, but just watching this on loop in front of me, it's just annoying and it just sucks. Like I don't really have a better decision, but so you're the stance it should be a touchback just because you lose it.
Maybe that's unpopular, but I feel like, if you change that one rule, then you'd have to change a number of rules to make it equitable.
Sort of interception's the only other rule you got to change though, right?
Well, I suppose, yeah.
It's an NFL show. NFL rule show, folks. That's what we're talking about now. It happens in
This
college.
is what we've come to, like 2 weeks into the off season.
Breaking down Cleveland Browns. Hey, Rashard Higgins, former Rams receiver, so that's what we're saying.
That's true.
I just happen to see it now, and it's just a hard thing to do when you make that move and it happens. But we have Devontae Adams moving on, we have Josh Allen moving on. Who else is moving on that we're missing? Probably a lot of people, right?
Yeah, so from Buffalo, we got Josh Allen, and then, of course, former New Mexico punter Corey
That's
Bajorquez.
right, kicking the ball away.
With Devontae Adams in Green Bay, of course, you have Jordan Love from
That's
Utah
right.
State.
Is he even active in any of these games? He's rarely active ever. He's like usually a healthy scratch every game.
No, it still counts, though.
He's on the team. Yeah, he gets paid,
Hey,
right?
if they win a Super Bowl, he's getting a Super Bowl ring. That's all I'm saying.
True, fair.
Nobody's going to take that away from him.
That's right.
In Tampa, you got, of course, Shaquille Barrett from
That's right.
Colorado
Shaq
State.
Barrett, yeah. You have.
And then in Kansas City, you got Darwin Thompson
That's
from
right,
Utah
Darwin
State.
Thompson.
So
One of the many
Utah
running
State is
backs.
showing up big time.
That's right. Use that recruiting, folks. Get the people in town. Kevin Logan. Bobby
Well, I mean,
Wagner
you
used
saw
to play.
the graphic that the Mountain West put out. It was back a couple weeks ago, I think, at this, or rather a week ago at this point, right?
Was it most players in the playoffs, like it has more as many as like two Power Five conferences combined or something like that?
You might be thinking of the All-Pro team,
Oh, there's
though.
all pro. Hey, why not say that as well,
Which,
right?
by the way, I don't know if people didn't see that. This was like a week and a half ago at this point. Mountain West had five players on the NFL All-Pro team, and the rest of the group of five had one.
It's pretty good, right? That's
That's pretty
amazing.
good.
Use
And
that to recruit.
it was players from five different Mountain West teams as well.
It's true. He had Bobby Wagner. I don't know if I have a Bobby Wagner. Was Josh Allen all pro? Was his
Yes, he
first
was. Second
team?
team.
Okay, that's what I was thinking. So him. I don't have a tweet in front of me, so I'm not going to guess, but those are two guys for sure. But
Adams.
of course, Adams, Allen. I don't know who else.
You're gonna have to dig a little
Wagner.
deeper for the last two.
Bobby Wagner, right? Let's see, not Michael Gallup. No, not Rashard Higgins. Not CT Thomas, not Cedric Wilson. He had the one big game though. You got it in front of me? Alex Smith and
Oh,
Higgins.
yeah, I got it in front of me. It's Joel Bitonio from Nevada,
Oh, that's right. Yeah, offensive lineman
second team left guard,
for
and
Cleveland
Jason
Browns.
Sanders, former New Mexico kicker.
Oh, that's right, the kicker. Okay, that's good. Hey, Craig Thompson, use this to your advantage. Come on, pump the league up.
It feels like they're doing a little more in that regard recently. I don't know if you noticed or not.
On social media or Craig Thompson.
It feels like they're kind of incrementally boosting the smack talk, you know?
That's good. No, as
Maybe
they
that's
should.
just me.
No, Twitter does a good job. I want to hear from the commissioner. It's like, come on, you bring these things up in media day and stuff. Come on, why not?
Exactly.
All right, so what are we getting to tonight? Here's our kind of discussion we're talking about. We got players coming back. We have the non-story according to John David Wicker from San Diego State AD on American Talk. And we're gonna have some fun with that. Plus, oh shoot, is there something else I'm missing, or is that it?
Danny Gonzalez.
Oh, Danny Gonzalez trying to get poached away, but saying no, he's giving them the Heisman pose. He's like, I am not accepting your money. I am gonna stay here in Albuquerque and be a starving artist first year head coach and make my dues and be good as a coach. That's a good comparison, right?
Well, that, and he's bringing back a whole host of talent from last year's team as well. But
So
we'll
who's he
get to
bring?
that later.
Who's he? Well, let's start that now. Who's he bringing back?
Okay, so if you're not following him on Twitter already, you can see the entire list there. I'll just run through it real quick. So there's Emmanuel Logan Green, Kyle Jarvis, tight end, Austin Cook, Kyle Stapley, offensive lineman, Ben Gonsalo, Adam Gay, Ben Davis, Joey Noble, a couple defensive linemen in
A lot
there,
of guys.
Rico Hanna, linebacker, Devin Sanders, linebacker, Patrick Peak, Shadrick Lowry, Tony Collier, Corey Hightower.
So these guys want to continue on their winning streak of two games
I don't see why not.
and come back more. Like, this is a great thing because there's a lot of guys, the way the season ended, it was a crappy season. And it not well, a couple of reasons. They had to hang out in Vegas all year. They have all road games. Games get postponed. They can't really have a traditional standard season, and they don't want to have that be in their last year where it's like it was more of a grind than it was to actually have fun playing college football. Because as we said, that had to be like beyond difficulty to do that. But
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends, so for me, it's, it's
Trying to
like
get them out of the house.
listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on,
Yeah, podcast, home casts.
your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Yeah, and what it does, especially in this case, is it sort of changes the calculus from what you would normally expect from, at least what looked like on paper last year was kind of like a year zero situation. And normally in those types of scenarios, you expect that it'll be kind of like a slow build back toward respectability. Usually look at it as being kind of like a 3 year window where by year three, and definitely by year four, you expect a team to kind of be back on the rise. And what I'm wondering for a team like New Mexico, where in some respects it was kind of a year zero situation, but they showed signs of life by the end of the year. And now they're getting so many of, their leadership on both sides of the ball. Getting guys like Austin Cook and Kyle Stapley back is huge for a team that, and not only has, that kind of stable of leadership coming back, but they've also tended to recruit pretty well relative to the rest of the conference over the last couple of recruiting classes as well. And so I wonder whether a team like New Mexico could be on a faster track than they might have otherwise been under normal circumstances.
They could be. They've won two in a row. Did you know they have the longest winning streak in the Mountain West, tied with Hawaii?
I did not. That's a fun fact.
At two games, because with San Jose State losing to Ball State,
yeah,
Boise State losing to in the championship game, they have the current longest tied for longest winning streak at two. So there's that as well to be proud of, which it's good. It's like getting aside, like, you're right, though, like, they finished the season strong with the two wins. They won with a true freshman walk-on quarterback and their fifth-string guy. It's like, so they had a confidence, like, hey, we can do this, even, not to even this guy doesn't have a scholarship, but my point being, like, he was a guy that just kind of chilling to learn and was probably hoping to get playing time in, like, his fourth year, you know what I mean? As a redshirt junior, he comes as a true freshman, and they do well. They also get, I'm trying to read this article here, but it's behind the paywall, apparently. Albuquerque Journal, they got reporting they got a Missouri transfer coming in, wide receiver, so that could be something. I think his name is CJ Boone, I believe, but the page keeps coming up, Boone, so, but that's a decent pickup. But like, you're right, like, getting them back, like, all these guys, it's gonna mean what a couple things it means. They keep experienced players back. They're not going to have to rely on. And plus, what this is, too, this is actually really good for New Mexico, because we saw how Bob Davie ended his tenure. He was pulling a Bill Snyder and getting JUCOs. Like, he was getting very few high school players to come in. And so, with this class for Danny Gonzalez, I don't have it in front of me, but I'm assuming we did some recruiting stuff lightly on the site, and we discussed before. I'm checking right now. But I believe they're not going as heavy as for the JUCO or, And so, having these older guys back, it'll allow them, because if they have these guys back, you can only have 85 scholarship guys. So their class is going to be smaller coming in. But they don't have to rely on these younger guys to come in. If these 10 to 12 guys, however many you rattle off there, that they don't have to worry relying on younger guys who may not have played a ton. These guys are coming back or have played. And so that's kind of a bonus. It's trying to look at some positives for what's happened the past year. They can bring in their young guys right now. They currently have a class of 23, and I'm seeing how many high school or JUCO guys, but they're middle of the pack in the Mountain West, and looks like most scrolling through here, like, from, it looks like high school guys for the most part, if I believe I'm correct, just a cursory look.
Yeah, they're laying a foundation for the long term there in Albuquerque.
And with these guys coming back, they don't have to rely on these guys to play. Not that they'd play as a true freshman, but it might give them an extra year at some positions to not have to rely on them as soon as they wanted to.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of a good positive thing, these guys coming back. So there's that to look forward. Quarterback play, it'll be quite interesting to see who comes out to start to be that. But the biggest and most interesting news, there are some schools trying to poach Danny Gonzalez to be a freaking defensive coordinator.
Two, if reports are to be believed, from Danny Gonzalez himself.
He said he didn't name them, but, and what's interesting about that is a couple things. First off, these Power 5 schools, I'm betting they're out west. I'm trying to think who has new coaching staff and new players out west. What Pac-12 had new coach? Any Pac-12 get a new head coach? It could have been Oregon. They also hit the Avalos.
Oregon just lost a defensive coordinator to Boise State.
It could have been them. Trying to think of anybody else off the top of my head. Cal, Stanford, no. UCLA, USC. I don't want to go through them all, but maybe Oregon makes a good choice right there, the obvious choice. But what's interesting, they must think so low of New Mexico in the job that he would up and leave to be a defensive coordinator. Like, that's how low they think. However, then they think highly enough of him to cover his own buyout and pay him more money than he's getting. And so I'm assuming, my opinion is that him taking this, keeping this job, because it's his first head coaching gig. It's, I don't care what job you're going to, it's basically a demotion, right? Like, maybe it was Texas. I don't know. I don't know his relationship with Steve Sarkisian would have been, because that's open job as well, and he was at ASU and Pac-12 and stuff like that, San Diego State. But, like, there's no reason to take this job. It's your first head coaching gig, and you say you're giving up after 1 year? No way.
Yeah, no, I didn't think that that was going to be the case.
I'm glad he said it, because that's like, he's like, screw you guys, I'm staying here to do something. I'm from New Mexico. I played at Albuquerque. I was a Lobo. Like, I want to do something. Like, if he leaves down the road in 5 years and he turns them around and goes a couple of back-to-back 8-win seasons and some school out west wants to get him, whatever, that happens all the time. But after year one and the way he finished the year, like, we looked at how many close games they had. It wasn't like they were getting, double checking my math here, but they got the 2 wins. The only real blowout loss they had, like, the Air Force loss wasn't good, but that was also that, like, what, 4 turnover games? And, like, that game wasn't close. Utah State, within 2 touchdowns. That was a very competitive first half. And San Jose State. So they had about mix and match. Like, Nevada was close. Obviously beat Wyoming. Hawaii was close. So they were not getting blown out every game, even though they were losing every game until the end of the year. They were competitive for the majority of the games outside of, like, maybe two or 8 total quarters, like the Air Force game, most of San Jose State, and second half of Utah State. But, like, him going, we're like, are you glad that he came out and said this, how committed he is to stay with the Lobos program?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good sign for the health of the Mountain West, where, like, you know, he and Brent Brennan out at San Jose State are kind of in that same boat, where I think, obviously, Brennan received more obvious overtures, or rather, there were more obvious connections drawn between him and in the most recent particular case, the Arizona job that ended up going to Jed Fish. But I think it's good for the Mountain West to have that kind of continuity, where there are guys there who are, you know, building a foundation. They are, you know, setting a tone. They have a certain attitude about, you know, making those programs successful. And you know, even though the Mountain West is by its nature as a group of five team is always going to be at least somewhat transient or somewhat of a stepping stone to, you know, larger platforms, bigger spotlights and things like that. You know, we just, you know, saw something similar. I think Zach Arnett, who's a former DC at San Diego State, you know, he's at Mississippi State now. They wanted him at LSU. He said thanks, but no thanks. And so I think that's the same kind of thing. Like, the Mountain West is developing coaches that are very well thought of and very highly coveted in certain sectors of the landscape.
You think so? So Danny Gonzalez, currently he makes $725,000. I thought it'd be a bit higher. Oh, Jay Norvell surprisingly makes less than him, but probably not for long. He's just behind Todd Graham. Like, this is last year's, obviously, so Harsin's listed here, stuff like that. Adazio's up there pretty high. I wonder what they would offer to. I bet it had to be about $1 million a year, right?
Probably,
I would think so.
But I mean, especially for, like, a Power 5 program.
Yeah, I'm trying to look at Power 5 stuff in the USA Today database. But
let's put it this way: like, in the Athletic has their own tracker of coordinator hires, and I believe the one example I saw that had a contract attached to it was South Carolina, and according to Josh Kendall, their new DC out there in Columbia, Clayton White, got a 3-year, $900,000 contract.
There are currently, as of going into this current last season, this is update as of December 16th, the assistant coaching database. You still with me? Okay, yeah. Sorry. I had a real beep. Sorry, I'm keeping that in. It, like, beeped like you're disconnected. Like, what the heck? But this is currently as of December 16th. TCU's listed higher because I guess there's a bonus or total pay, but not base salary. 27 making $1 million or more. So if you're saying at least 900,000, that's a top 35 job.
I mean, that's also SEC money too. So, I mean, that's probably at the top end.
Well, no, but this 35.
A guy like Gonzalez might have been able to make.
I mean, the 35 jobs, like, I'd say the base for him to be offered to maybe even think about would be 900K. Like, he's not taking a job for, or even. He mentioned they both pay more. It's every Power 5 school above him. Like, most of it is SEC money, but
kind of makes you wonder whether Brian Harsin tried to court him out there to Auburn.
Maybe. Well, Kevin, you
know, before Derek Mason ultimately became the head coach from Vanderbilt.
Sorry, Kevin Steele was making $2.5 million at Auburn as a defense coach.
I'm just saying it makes you wonder. I mean, because
yeah, it does.
That's one opening. Illinois, of course, hired Brett Bielema recently.
Arizona, you mentioned.
Yeah. If you're following Stephen Godfrey on Twitter, coaching season is not over.
Oh, no.
Which I think everybody takes to be an allusion to the Tennessee job possibly opening up. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe somebody from Knoxville was putting out a feeler to him on that front. But, yeah, it's just kind of interesting to think of what the possibilities might have been.
Yeah, and so that's what I was thinking too, like about $900K. And also some NFL jobs are filling up, like Harbaugh's not going back to the NFL. There's mm-hmm. been most NFL jobs have been, I believe all of them at the moment have been hired from within the league of some sort, either current or former coaches. Even like there's the rumor, like Kellen Moore to Jack, what was it, Jack's Atlanta or something? Wasn't that some crazy rumor?
I think it was Philadelphia.
Or Philadelphia. I'm like, oh boy, that'd be wild. But it's good he's staying because you're at continuity. Because last year, I'm behind an article you guys, we've written up or starting to write up. Like we graded the first year coaches. Maybe that'll be a show down the road. But half the league basically was new coach this year.
Mm-hmm.
And this year we have, it's going to be just one in Boise State. That's it.
Well, two. Oh, in Utah State.
Oh, sorry. Oh, Paul, I forgot. Apologies to Blake Anderson there. Two coaches. But yeah, compared to the year before where you had New Mexico, UNLV, San Diego State. You had Colorado State. Who else am I missing? Half the league, whatever. There's Fresno State as well. Hawaii. All these teams have teams have new coaches, but it's good he's staying because the thing I like the most out of this, I came out and said that I was offered this and, like I said, said no because I wanted to be here. I want to bring integrity and excitement, leadership, the work ethic and presence in our community to our team that we all expect. That's from the AD. And so he's glad, Eddie Nunes is glad. Obviously, he should be glad that Danny's going to stay, but this is I like they came out and said that I was off for this and told them no.
Yeah, and I think the fact that so many players have bought in to give it one last go is kind of maybe the best testament that you can have to what Gonzalez is building out there.
Yeah, and it's a tough job. It's like these teams that came in realize it's a tough job. They want to court them away because
yes,
they have like yeah. remember because here's the biggest thing. When you had, Rocky Long there as the head coach before, he left. He's like, this is the best I could do. And it was like a 8-5 season or something.
Mm-hmm.
I always do remember like when they played Utah, like in the Mountain West back in like when Urban Meyer was there. And for every couple of years, they had guys like running backs. They had all these good teams, but they were just, they weren't bad, but they were always 7-10 points behind Utah, BYU, San Diego State when they were being bad. Like when they're playing teams that were good, they were rarely like at the bottom of the bottom when Rocky Long was there. They may have had a losing season here or there, but they are always competitive and close. He just couldn't get them over the hump. And he's like, that's why I got to step down. There's nothing more I can do. And he's a guy who's from freaking Albuquerque. And he goes back this past year to be the DC because he wants to kind of sunset his career out there in Albuquerque at a place he loves and know there's a chance and to help his buddy Danny Gonzalez be a good head coach. So all around, it's great.
Yeah, things are looking up in Albuquerque, I would say.
We'll see. All right, so let's go to Nevada. They have players coming back. Great. I'm looking for the link you sent me and I'm trying to find it here. So Nevada is another team who I've boldly said could be a New Year's Six contender if they bring most of the talent back.
And I think it's interesting because I think it was 11 seniors have said that they're going to be coming back. Jay Norville put it out there. I want to say it was earlier this week. And to me, it really comes down to the talent that's coming back at certain positions. Obviously, some of the big names like Elijah Cooks, who he missed basically the entire year after getting hurt in the opener.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we know what he can do. You know, back in 2019, he had 8 touchdowns. He had nearly 1,000 yards. You know, you put him back opposite of Romeo Dubs and
fingers crossed
Torrey Horton and watch out, you know. But to me, the big development is how many guys are coming back on the defensive line. And, you know, Sam Hammond, Cameron Toomer, Tristan Nichols, Zach Mahana, not a lot of household names there. But as a unit, you know, obviously Dom Peterson was kind of the big name there. But, you know, Sam Hammond was also right there. He was
an second team
conference selection. Yeah. You know, he had 7.5 tackles for loss. He was disruptive in the middle of that defense. Zach Mahana was a role player. Cam Toomer stepped up late in the year when they needed him to. And so to me, you know, those are kind of the big deals. And this is not to say that Elijah Cooks is not a big deal, But the step forward that they took on defense and Lawson Hall at linebacker is definitely another one of those. He's coming back as well. And then in the secondary, Burdale Robbins, maybe a little bit underrated. I think when we put out our staff's all-conference team, I forget exactly what he said, but I don't think he was necessarily pleased with where we voted him. But, you know, he's a guy who was among the league leaders in passes defended last year. I think he also graded out as one of the best cornerbacks in the conference by Pro Football Focus as well. So all of those names coming back on the defensive side of the ball is really, really good news for a Wolfpack team where, yeah, they took one step forward, you know, in 2020. But I think it's still on the table that they could take another one with all these guys coming back.
No, I definitely could. Like, even if I don't think Dom Peters is going to return. I just don't. And Dubs, like, he's probably gone. Like, but if he comes back, that'd be amazing. But we're going to make through some sort of list or maybe some article of like, hey, we do kind of some weird, not weird, like preview spring type stuff. Like, bring it, you're right, defense is huge. Bringing these guys back, the offense should be fine. Carson Strong is going to be back here. He said so. They're going to have Toa Tala. They have Cooks here, you mentioned. But if they somehow keep Dubs, they're going to be better than last year. Even losing Don Peterson, because we saw in a couple games where he was half strength and not, and wasn't able to play, where they were still not elite, but still very good. And getting, like you mentioned, Hall back, who had played, 47 games in his career? It's crazy. Like, these guys have played a lot. Like you mentioned, Robbins, all these defenders coming back, Nichols, Toomer, Mahana. Like, it's another year. It's another defense that was already good. And it's just going to bolster them out. Like, I'm still going to predict, like, I'm also going to send out a poll probably to our super early 2021 picks just because. Why not? It's end of January. Like, Nevada might be my number one pick, even without knowing the status of Dubs.
I mean, you said it last week, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago on the podcast, that the West is going to be stacked.
Heck yeah. Why not? Yes, no quarterback play. Like, yeah, Nick Starkle, if he's going to come back. If Lucas Johnson, San Diego State's good, the running game gets going. Hawaii, Cordero is going to come back. Like, UNLV will probably be at the bottom, but they got to be improved. You know what I mean? Like, Fresno, Ronnie Rivers coming back. Jay Kaner, geez. Like,
and they've kept bringing in guys too. Fresno State has.
Yeah.
They brought in like two more Power Five transfers just this past week. They brought in Ty Jones from Washington.
That's right.
Wide receiver.
Oh, he ended up there, Ty Jones.
Yes, he did.
That is excellent. It's a story about him. He went to Provo High School here down the street from me, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So he does I'm double checking right now, but this story's gonna sound great if I'm correct. So he, you know, these guys make their announcement on TV and stuff.
Yeah.
So I am pretty sure, I don't want to say it, like, because this is only was he a sophomore or a freshman?
I don't have that information.
I'm double checking right now. I think, I believe he's a guy that came to our TV station to make the announcement and chose Washington.
Mm-hmm.
I think, no, it was not him. It must have been somebody else. He's a fourth-year guy. That would have been funny. There's one guy who's like, oh, come to town. The only reason I remember, there was a huge snowstorm. I went to the airport that night to pick up my wife, but I remember they had the guy on TV, got delayed. But he's like, oh, okay, and he picks, like, some out-of-state school.
Yeah, and they also picked up, a former four-star running back from Utah as well, Jordan Wilmore.
That's right. They've had a lot of guys leaving with the program. So, yeah, Jordan Wilmore, yeah, he did okay. I think he started the first couple of games before Ty Jordan took over, and then unfortunately his passing over Christmas break was pretty tragic.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Fresno's getting guys like the West. It's this year. I'm just excited because even in the Mountainside, Air Force returns a ton. They're always going to be fine. You have I don't know about CSU, Utah State are question marks, but Boise should still be fine. New Mexico should be a bit better, but it's going to be the West is going to be a team. Wyoming will be good depending on their quarterback play. Because you put seven out there too, like returning quarterbacks and head coaches, there's what, four or five? Is that correct overall, I think you said?
Yeah.
You did some tweet about it because it's what, Wyoming? I don't remember.
Well, and that was because they were talking about what was a head coach and starting quarterback combinations.
Yeah, Fresno, Hawaii, Wyoming.
And that was in relation to, I think it was Chris Benini's top 10 group of five teams.
Which, we'll see how that works out.
But of the teams that weren't listed, San Diego State wasn't on that list, but they've got both of those guys coming back.
Technically. Brayden
Hoke and Lucas Johnson / Carson Baker / Jordan Brookshire.
Generous.
Fresno, Hawaii. Yeah, I think I listed like four or five Wyoming, different teams. Yeah. And speaking of Wyoming, you know, they've had a couple more guys announced they were coming back for 2021 as well. Trey Smith on the offensive side of things.
Pretty big deal.
And Garrett Kroll on the defensive side of things. And it's interesting because obviously we still, at least to my knowledge, haven't heard anything about what the defensive players in particular who opted out last year are. I'm assuming their standing is intact.
I hope so.
I don't see any reason why it wouldn't be. But Kroll is a guy where he missed a chunk of last year, I believe, with injury, but he's been productive in the past. And so, you know, obviously they aren't necessarily going to lean on him to kind of have to be the guy up front. It seemed like even with the opt-outs, even with him being banged up last year, that they didn't miss a beat when it came to, you know, defending the run and getting after passers up front. But, you know, all of a sudden that defensive line for the Cowboys looks very, very, very stacked, in my opinion.
Oh, heck yeah, definitely should be. You know what I mean? Like, I think at the defensive coach there, it's the OC and the offense has been an issue, outside of just running Xavier and Valaday forever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Is Valaday returning as well? I forget his status. He is a junior. So they bring him and Trey Smith back?
Mm-hmm.
Holy crap. They both...
And I think they're also getting Titus Swen back as well.
Why are we not doing like an 80-20 split running the ball with these guys?
I mean, they were pretty close over the last couple of years.
It's wild. Like, this, the depth they have, it's going to be crazy. Those are good. All right, let's get to our final topic here, I guess. We'll get to it now. This happens all the time. The American, Mountain West, blah, 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 blah. This happens here. This happens there. So we already know Boise State was, I still say, the AD at the time before Kurt H.C. got kind of like reassigned. Was he a fundraising guy now or something?
Mm-hmm.
Where it's basically a good old pat on the head to Brian Harsin. Oh, we'll go talk to these conferences. We're going to West Coast, Big West. But over the weekend, or I guess last week, not weekend, my days are confused at the moment. There's a little blurb in Pete Thamel's kind of look back at college football. The sourcing to me was felt kind of like iffy. Did you feel that way too about them saying there's talks between Boise and San Diego State? It didn't seem overly confident that was going to happen, or that was going on, right?
Yes.
So my thought was, it's what my thought always is. Well, maybe they went to the Big East before, but now they're not. But then again, I don't know. It just seemed odd. But we're going to talk a little bit about this, but then we're going to have some fun with it. So let's just go to the meaty comments, Matt, about Wicker San Diego State basically calling it a non-story.
Mm-hmm.
So he says he takes calls all the time, which I totally believe that it could happen. But on a scale of like 1 to 10, what do you think of this like actually happening in the next 5 years?
Two.
A two? For any team or San Diego State?
For any team.
So with that being said, I kind of agree with you because Wicker makes a good point where he says it's a lateral move at best, which one thing I don't buy it as well, but I'll back up 1 second here. The American already said they don't want an all-sports team out west. They want football only. And so why would San Diego State, why would Boise State sacrifice going to the Big West if they want them, which is kind of an interesting thought Wicker said, or going to the WCC, which is mostly a religious conference, religious-based schools, or, dare I say, Matt, go back to the WAC, despite the new teams.
I mean, that's going to be a while.
That's why I'm saying that's not going to happen. So, why does this come out? Is this just him just messing around, or what are they doing?
I honestly have no idea. I mean, I think the talk about conference realignment is sort of overblown no matter what kind of angle you're taking. And I think I've said this on the podcast before, but I think it's because we don't really know what the pandemic is going to do to budgets long term. But I think it's going to have the effect of making a lot of programs reticent to give up what they already have or what they already know they're going to be bringing in. I think it's going to make them more reluctant. And by them, I mean conferences. I think it's going to make them reluctant to split the pie more ways than they absolutely have to.
And also, why would...
At least for the foreseeable future.
Like 5 years, right? You would say? Because what's interesting is that the John Williner, the San Jose Mercury News, does a great job in the Pac-12. So was John Cazano and the Oregonian. Like, I read the hotline like every time it comes out from Williner because it's always great stuff. Like, he mentioned like the big Pac-12. Like, I know Mountain West just signed their TV deal, so it's not really relevant about, which is a good timing because... Look at how many basketball games just this past month. I think they've had 3 on over their CBS. They had a couple football games. They had the Fox championship game on Fox. They had the the Arizona Bowl featuring the Mountain West, even though it didn't go their way on regular Fox, got bumped up because of circumstances. But he was mentioning, like, it's like a 2-year process. Like, the Pac-12 new deal, I think, would start in 23, which means they're going to start negotiating in part of 22, which means this year in 21, they need to have a good year if they want to, whatever the Pac-12 is going to try to do. Like, the Big 10 and Big 12 are a couple years down the road. So it's not like this is an immediate thing, because Pac-12, unless they make a crazy move, because Larry Scott wanted to do that before, that's not much is going to move there. But like, why would the Big 10 or all the Big 12, these conferences that are going to, with the next couple years, make money, particularly the Pac-12, like, they're in the worst spot to make a new deal. Like, who's going to want to spend all this money when the championship game was the lowest ratings in a long time? College football is mostly down. Like, for people watching, I know Matt Brown did something for an Extra Points newsletter about the Group of Five playoff type of deal, or the ratings in general. There weren't very many that were great. Even the American getting on those ABC time slots, the over-the-air channels. So that's why a move is weird. Like, you're right, because the American deal, I think, goes to like 31, 32. They didn't renegotiate the deal when UConn left, which I guess that gives teams more money. But, like, how much more value would Boise and San Diego State bring besides more games? Because I think the American pays them out about, what, $7 million a year for all sports, not just football.
I believe so, yeah.
And so, but you're right, like, why? Well, what is there's incentives for teams to make cost-effective moves or changes, but also why would ESPN in this case, because they own the American rights, why would they want to open up their pocketbooks more? Because it's not like ESPN is part of the Mountain West anymore. If the Mountain West was with ESPN, I could maybe see them, because that would make more sense. My logic being, you're already paying for Boise and San Diego State games on ESPN for the Mountain West. Now they're just being shipped to a new conference. They're not really forking out more money. You know what I mean? They are, but they aren't, because they're already airing these games anyways. This way it would be on bringing on two new teams that would require more money, because there's no way, first off, the American would take these teams if the money was going to stay the same, because that's a huge drop in money for sharing the pie two more ways. And ESPN side, why would they want to open it up when they're losing money hand over fist? Like, they had hundreds of jobs, either layoffs or not filled.
Exactly.
So should we get to our fun game instead? Because we already know the case. So Wicker says that's probably not going to happen. Boise is not going to happen, because the WAC thing is like, come on, the WAC's not going to happen, right? Even them getting like Sam Houston State in the mix. Like, the basketball might be okay, but it's still going to be behind. Like, the Big West is a 23rd conference per Ken Palm. Like, why does San Diego State want to just derive themselves to do that?
Yeah, and Mark Ziegler of the Union Tribune pointed out that the Big West hasn't had multiple teams in the basketball tournament since, what was it, 2005?
Yeah, Utah State and Pepperdine, who are no longer in the conference.
Utah State and Pacific.
Oh, Pacific, actually. Sorry. Pacific, yeah. Apologies.
Yeah, it's just I think a lot of people, when they think about conference realignment, they lose kind of like the broader perspective, which, yes, football is the moneymaker, but there are certain instances, and I think San Diego State is definitely one of them, and I'm not a basketball head, but they do well on the hard court. Yeah. I know that much. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, when they think about these kinds of long-term potential moves, maybe it's that their calculus is a little bit different than Boise's. Which is kind of odd to say, because I don't really pay that much attention to college basketball, but I know the Broncos basketball is having a moment right now too.
They've been pretty good under Leon Rice, nothing amazing, but it's been their best like 8-year stretch probably ever.
Yeah, so it's just one of those things where, you know, San Diego State is looking at this whole situation differently, and they sort of have to, like you said, by virtue of geography, by virtue of what they do well. And yeah, it's just, you know, the Mountain West right now is the best thing for them, and maybe that won't always be the case, but, you know, but I think that more likely they're going to try and find their way into the Pac-12 and whenever that conference can get its act together,
exactly.
And make sure that everybody's getting a healthy amount of money, then maybe they'll reconsider it. But I don't really see that happening for reasons outside of San Diego State's control.
I think it
has less to do with what San Diego State is doing right or wrong, and more to just kind of larger influences that they really don't have anything to do with.
Yeah. It's like their new stadium. Great. It's also the thing we say, you're lucky enough to be invited 85 years ago to why Illinois and Duke or Syracuse or these Maryland Rutgers, obviously more recent, why they're in a certain conference. Mm-hmm. But I think here's a question somebody asked you, and we'll get to kind of a game thing we're going to do here. Would either do, like, if you were to place odds on either going independent for football in Boise and San Diego State, what would you say?
I'd say good luck.
Do you think that's a viable option? Like, do you think either can make $5 million a year going by themselves? Like, could they command $500,000 a home game for about $3 million?
I doubt it.
Doubt it. It's about what they're getting out of the Mountain West. You don't think they can make the same amount of money?
I mean, maybe, but yeah, if assuming they have a similar kind of deal to what BYU has right now, where BYU plays on average, what, 3 Mountain West teams a year?
At the moment, yeah, they got, yeah, but it'd be a thing where they want to play those teams as well after leaving the conference.
You know, you think about that, you think about a situation, and I think that it's not totally analogous, but I think about a team like New Mexico State, for instance, mm-hmm. which is really the only other independent team in the West, and they play 3 Mountain West teams a year, but beyond that, you know, there's only so many Pac-12 teams to go around.
And typically September games, too, only.
Yeah, and the Pac-12 only plays 3 non-conference opponents, so those opportunities are relatively limited. And then all of a sudden, you're having to look further east to, like, you know, you're scheduling, you know, UMass more often. You're scheduling UConn a little more often. Or Army. So, I mean, it just seems like it would be a slight step down in the quality of opponent overall.
I can see
So I don't know that it makes sense. Also, at least not right now.
Yeah, because like they get some more bye games. Like maybe I think Boise would be slightly better off because they're getting home and homes like Michigan State. Teams like that are coming to town, or Florida State too, if that return game ever happens. But you'll have more bye games. Your schedule could be severely imbalanced. Like, yeah, let's say you get one Pac-12 team in September. You're going to play New Mexico State. BYU possibly could be in the mix because they both played each other. That's okay. Then you're right, UConn, UMass. But then they might have to play freaking Idaho or Idaho State, some FCS school last week of November. Like, do you want your – like, trust me if you don't want this, because if you're, like, me following BYU and covering them, like, their home schedule in November, they hate it. They typically have been getting teams, like, really bad teams. It was supposed to be better this year, but, like, typically they get an FCS school at home. They'll get some – maybe a okay Mountain West school, which is fine but not ideal. But UMass or UConn or something like that, like some independent where it's like, this is ridiculous. You get one home – you get, like, 2 home games, and it's, like, an FCS school in New Mexico State. It's like, who wants that? You know what I mean? You sit your butts in Boise, Idaho, Albertson Stadium. You think you can't get fans when, like, San Jose State or New Mexico comes to town? Do you get fans when you have to play Idaho State? Come on.
There you go.
All right, so here's the thing. Two things people ask. Should the Mountain West American create a super conference? Would that
speaking of things that'll never, ever happen.
My other option is never going to happen. This might be a short segment here if we're talking about. But do you think, like, maybe would it be better off here? This is what somebody mentions. How about a schedule agreement of some sort instead, like a challenge every year?
I mean, I'd be all for it.
But I assume you would think that'd be more likely than a full-on merger, whereas either be your – well, there's a couple ways you could look at this. One way, you just merge and you play teams and you have a championship game where you actually play – you have 12 Mountain West, 11 American. You play maybe 4 Mountain West teams as we are right now, 4 American teams, and it'd be hard to consider or make a championship game out of that. You could do that, which seems least likely. You could have a quasi-playoff where the champions play each other or schedule an agreement.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think would be the best option for either league?
I mean, I think if you did a one-off once a year, I don't see why that wouldn't work for a lot of teams.
Only one game, not more than one?
I mean, let's put it this way. Would you rather, if you were a Mountain West team, would you rather have an FCS opponent or would you rather have an opponent from the American?
What team are you, though? Are you UNLV or are you San Diego State? That matters,
I don't think it matters.
You don't think so?
Like, think about it like this. Like, because we're thinking about San Diego State, right? We're talking about San Diego State a minute ago. So let's say like they were able to implement this the next time they have a non-conference opening, which is like, I don't know, 2025.
No kidding.
So right now their non-conference schedule that year is Stony Brook, Washington State, and California. I think if you were to add an American team on there, assuming that, you know, assuming that this format would be such that the presumed quality of the team would be somewhat equal to whatever San Diego State is like at that point.
Could they flex, do a flex where you play third week of November and you play each other where it's a to-be-determined game, but at that point you have like first place, second, all the way down?
Like, think of it that way. I mean, I think, you know, you have to think of it in terms of like what possible alternatives there could be. Mm-hmm. Like, it could be that the Aztecs could go out and schedule BYU if the Cougars still looking for opponents at that point. Mm-hmm. You know, they could go out and schedule New Mexico State, like we mentioned a minute ago, because they're set to play the Aggies two more times over the next three seasons, things like that. But I think for a lot of teams, you know, if they were able to get like, you know, one FCS team, two Power Five teams, and a team from the American for their non-conference schedule, I think a lot of teams would find that to be a decent, satisfactory non-conference schedule.
So look at right now, 2024, San Diego State, Washington State. This is basically your setup you're talking about. Washington State at home, they go to Cal, Portland State, and then going to Central Michigan, who Central Michigan is typically pretty good in the MAC. They're usually like, what, top two, top three in their division. Mm-hmm. So you're talking about schedules similar to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the inflection is really kind of like Central Michigan. It's like you have your FCS team somewhere on the West Coast. You have your one or two Pac-12 teams, maybe a Big 12 team or a Big 10 team every so often. And then, you know, that last spot would just go to like an American team.
Would that be
to like... as opposed to like an independent UConn or New Mexico State or things like that. Would that suck for like the independent Aggies? Yeah, but
don't be independent. I don't know.
I think it would give the Mountain West an additional option in the event that, like, you know, maybe they can't schedule that second Power Five game. And then if they need to, you know, if a team like, let's say Fresno State, for example, because they're also set to play New Mexico, I think one or two more times in the years to come. Like, if they have, like, one Power 5 team, they host an AAC team, they host New Mexico State, and they travel to another Power 5 team, I think a lot of, you know, depending on the AAC team, I think that a lot of Bulldogs fans would go for something like that. I might be wrong, but I don't think I am.
No, I like the schedule. That's a good scheduling setup. Like, I'm looking at UNLV really quick. Like, in 2023, it's at Michigan, Vanderbilt, at BYU, at UTEP, mm-hmm. or the next year, this upcoming year. Eastern Washington at ASU, host Iowa State at UTSA. Like, I do like that idea where it'd be agreement. I think I like the idea a lot. I think one idea that I mentioned would be pretty good, like the flexing would be quite interesting because they try that with basketball a little bit. Like, the Missouri Valley Challenge was a complete joke and a waste. The mm-hmm. A-10 Challenge is going to get pushed back. But, like, how – like, they – like, there's some talk this year. Like, and we know flex scheduling can work. That's not, like, something – it's out of the norm. It's like crazy because you saw BYU Coastal Carolina set up a game like in 2 days' notice. We've seen games get played within a week or scheduled in 2 weeks. Like I would like that idea.
Let's put it like this. Like, if Fresno State and SMU scheduled a home and home for 2025 and 2026, who would be mad about that right now?
Nobody. They're both slightly above middle pack above average in each conference.
Like, if the Mustangs came to the Valley in 2025 and then the Bulldogs went to Dallas in 2026.
That'd be nice.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, the latter end would be a very demanding schedule because they already have road trips scheduled for USC and Washington State.
Yeah.
But that's always, I mean, for, you know, Fresno State, they coined the term anyone, anytime, anywhere.
Exactly.
Like, this is what they do. So I don't think they're going to be shying away from a challenge like that if teams from the American were amenable to setting something like that up. But I mean, I think you're right. If there was some flexibility that could be built into something like that, then I think it would benefit everybody, especially if there's like an opportunity for a team at or near the top of the conference to, you know, bolster their standing for a run at a New Year's Six bowl game, things like that. I think, you know, having something that like that built in is going to be useful in the long run. But for a lot of teams that already have, you know, non-conference schedules filled out for the next several seasons, Fresno State's one of them. They've already got four. opponents for the next 4 years.
Yeah.
That's kind of a non-starter, at least for the immediate future. But if you're thinking about, you know, by the middle of the decade, where a lot of these teams still have openings in their non-conference schedule, then you can start kind of thinking ahead and determining, you know, how this might work so that everybody can benefit from it.
Yeah, but you can move Eastern Washington, you can move Sac State, you can move those teams around.
I mean, you could, yeah.
Or New Mexico State, really. But here's what I do. I think it'd be really great. Like, the flex thing would be fun. Here's a bit, because they kind of briefly mentioned this year about the playoff. Like, we're not going to get ourselves a playoff. We'll be getting close. Maybe Cincy does something crazy this year. It's because I don't know if they play, but they just kind of build off on this past year. But what they could do, like the third week, not Thanksgiving week, maybe it's Thanksgiving weekend, maybe the week before, but you go through the schedule and you have, okay, let's just like look at this past year. When you look at the rankings, you had, was San Jose State ranked when Cincy was ranked late in the year in the playoff pool, I believe, at some point?
San Jose State entered, I believe it was the last or the next to last.
So let's say a typical year, because this past year wasn't typical for a million reasons, but like in the college football playoff, like when you look at week, like what, third week of November or something, or second week of November, there typically there's a Mountain West team. Like I'm looking back in week 13, 2019, you had the teams that mixed up Memphis 18, Boise 20, Cincy 19. Like you're telling me, like if those two are play, like say you match up 1-1 or something, and you play Thanksgiving weekend, and you still have that game, you have your next week conference game and then the championship weekend. That game, if you're high enough, like it would do a couple things. Let's say they're ranked even higher. It would give you a great chance for a win. And if you're somehow even close to the playoff, you're up even higher because you get a good quality win. It's going to be almost guaranteed a ranked team when you're playing 1-1 and 2-2, or at least 1v1.
Mm-hmm.
But if you lose, let's just say you lose that game, you're not technically out of a New Year's Six spot because all you got to do is win your conference. It doesn't necessarily – it hurts your ranking, obviously, but it doesn't hurt your position to win the conference, which is most teams' goals anyways. And so even if, like, there's still a chance for you to come back and get back in the ranking to move ahead of that team that beat you in America if they don't win their conference.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a possibility where it's not just a great football, it's not to get exposure out there, but there's a chance to, yes, you lose that game, you're possibly out with only two or three games left, but you're not officially out of it because you could still come back in because you lost to a ranked team. Even though we know how the group of five is ranked, they'd probably get punished and kicked to oblivion out of the others receiving votes. If you are, say, 18 and lose, like if it's 12 versus 18, 18 loses to 12, 18 is getting crushed out of the rankings almost no matter what. But all you got to do is win your conference. And so that, I think, is a couple reasons why. Why not go that route? Wouldn't that be more exciting? Like, it's a week's notice. You know you're at home or on the road because you rotate who's going where. But, like, wouldn't that be pretty exciting to know after this week you have a new game, a new opponent, you still have a week to prepare?
The only other logistical thing you'd have to consider is the fact that Mountain West has 12 teams and the American right now only has 11.
Yeah, I hear you. But Air Force already plays Navy every year, so I don't know. That is a problem. But, sorry, if you're 12th in Mountain West, you don't get to play. You find somebody else. I don't know. That is a problem.
Well, so that brings up an interesting question. Do you make the bottom team the odd man out, or do you protect the team at the top?
No, I'd rather have the best team play because that gives you the better chance to move up higher.
Something to think about, though.
You're telling me if Boise State fans had a chance to play Cincinnati this year, they would rather not play them for a better chance to get to New Year's Six game?
You'd have to ask them.
I don't know.
For those of you who are listening to this, feel free to add us at MWC Wire on Twitter and let us know what your thoughts on that would be.
It is a concept because they're also pissed they thought San Jose State or Boise is ducking people too, remember?
You'd also have to incentivize the American to set something like this up because, of course, the Mountain West has had the Americans upper hand over the last few years.
What are they, 14-10? Somebody pointed out to us on Twitter.
Since let's see, 2013, yeah, 14-10. I think I put that out there.
Yeah,
back in late December, I believe.
So who needs this more, the Mountain West or American, if this were to be a thing?
That's a good question.
I think, honestly, I think the Mountain West needs it more because Americans had the higher ranked team and made more New Year's Six bowl games than the Mountain West.
I'm just gonna say nobody's gonna want to face Hawaii in that regard because they're 2-0 against the American.
2-0. Imagine
them and Boise State are both 2-0 against the American.
What's San Diego State 1-1?
No, they're San Diego State is 2-1.
Yeah, they beat San Diego State, or they beat Hawaii, or not, wrong team, sorry. Houston in Vegas. They beat Cincy and Hawaii in boat race Houston, or Cincinnati.
Yeah, I mean, the other one precedes the American, though, back in 2007.
Fine, it doesn't count. Just saying. Does that count?
That's right.
2-0.
I'm going by like 2013 or 2014.
That's fine. I just want to see UCF have, or Hawaii have to travel to either Orlando or Honolulu for the one game.
That would be hilarious.
I don't know. Like, I think that would be fun. Like,
but if, then again, they've been to Australia. Going to Orlando is nothing.
It's nothing. Yeah, it's like, it's child's play. I would say the Mount. So answer my question. Who needs it more then? Who do you think?
I think the Mountain West would.
I would too. Yeah, because the rankings and top 10 teams and them being American being ranked higher. So let me go to my.
I think it's just that they're losing the perception battle right now.
It all goes back to people freaking out about Craig Thompson, who's not doing his job to promote the league.
Because I mean, it's one thing for us and for players and for coaches to point to like and say scoreboard. You know, we're beating them more often than they're beating us.
Facts.
But yeah, I mean, I guess it, you know, when it matters most, you know, they have an agenda that they're pushing more successfully. And
the Mountain West has no agenda. That's the problem.
Exactly.
That's the big thing. All right, let me go. Can I go to my last fun topic? Did you see the relegation comment we had on Twitter?
I did not.
So, if you're not familiar with European soccer, basically any North American sport, if you're really good, you go to the highest league. If you're not really good, you move down. Just mm-hmm. somebody made a comment. Why not? You like it's almost like a super league, where you have every. I don't know how you'd set this up, but my thinking would be, in 1 year, you'd have to maybe combine the conferences where you still have the American Mountain West or Tier 1 or Tier 2 or something, but basically for those who don't know what it'd be, there would be 23 teams. So you put 12 in the top, 11 in the bottom. Maybe you do 1 year, I don't know, would you use like advanced numbers like SP Plus or Kali Matrix or something like for 1 year to do it? Where, I guess, that would that be fair? First off, do you think that'd be kind of fair to do it or no?
I suppose. I guess it would depend on how many teams were in each division, because I think one thing you could
pods
easily do pod. I was just gonna say that. You know me so well.
I do, but it also makes sense. Like you do, I think it'd be a well thing to do. It would be, but I think how it could be done, like it would be fascinating, because I would love this in college football because it would make sense. And what you could do to incentivize, because part of this, well, if you're in this higher, bigger conference, like let's say you're like the Big Ten or Big 12, you drop down to the league, you lose like millions upon millions of dollars. You can make it where you pool the money together, where there is a benefit to being in Tier 1, but it's not detrimental to your athletic program, because we know how football funds all the other sports too, essentially. Mm-hmm. And so you can make it where if you're in the top tier, and it's not like a big difference, like the Mountain West Americans, like whatever, like the difference in pay is not much, but if you're just to say, I should have looked up the difference in pay. I think it's about 2 million pay difference, but let's just say you get a million and a half more for being in Tier 1 to Tier 2. That's not going to be. It's not going to crush your program. You know what I mean? Mm. Like you're still making decent money. And then what you do, the way it's set up everywhere else is where if you win the bottom tier, not even win, but what they do, it's like the NBA playoffs. That this past year, it's the closest thing we had. Like if you're the 7 seed, plays 10, 8, plays 9 to kind of get that playoff bid or something like that. So what you could do is take the. I think this is like how EPL does it, or Champions League, and all the other leagues, where you take the bottom two teams in Tier 1, the top two in Tier 2, because I don't know how bowls work, but who cares? You'd play that game at some point where you'd put like the – so I guess you'd put Team 11 in Tier 1 versus the second team in Tier 2 or whatever. You play. The teams would play each other essentially, and the winners get in. And then you only swap two spots at a time. Maybe in football you do three because it's a guy's only play a couple of years, but that's how it work. Where if you basically finish top two or three, you move up. And oh no, I'm mistaken. See, Matt, I don't follow European soccer as much as I should. But does anybody here? I don't. Do you? Do you wake up at 5 a.m. to watch EPL on NBC?
I dabble.
I need to see. Here's the thing by me not doing this. What actually needs to be done is the top two or three teams move up, but then the bottom couple and the top tier play each other to stay. That's what it is. So my mistake. So if we do four at a time, that would be fun. Like you move four up or two up. Sorry, let me get my facts right here. You move two up from the bottom.
This I hate
it. This is terrible. This is why it never happened to American sports. I didn't write down my thoughts, but I got it here now. So if you guys are with me at a 57 minute mark, I'm going to get my facts straight because this is hilariously for people. You know, Matt, people are yelling at me. This is not hard to do. This is super easy.
Can we disagree? Anybody who goes winless gets banished to the WAC for 5 years?
Yes. Yes. But here's
the call. It's like the Phantom Zone.
The Phantom Zone. You joined New Mexico State in Area 51, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But basically what it is. Okay. Honestly, here's what it is. It took me a second to think about it. If you're top two in the bottom league, you move up. The bottom four in the top tier play each other and the winners stay. So you rotate two at a time. That's what somebody mentioned for relegation. Like, would that excite you if you're UNLV and you had to fight to take on whoever at the top of the American is or whoever it may be?
Yeah, I don't see why not.
I think that would be interesting. It won't ever happen. Like a Super League. Plus, my expert explanation skills failed me here. Nobody's going to get it. But somebody mentioned that. But like, if we honestly had that, that would actually make it more fun. And if the money's not that much different, million or 2 million here would be great. But
naturally, it'll never happen.
It'll never happen because it's a fun
idea.
But
maybe some,
right?
Maybe someday when they have the new NCAA football game, fingers crossed.
Yeah, can we hack that?
They can have that mode in there. We can make our wildest fantasies come true.
That would be fun because honestly, it's like I'd always play like a lower team like Northern Illinois with Michael Turner. Years ago, mm-hmm. but it was running back number 22 or something. I'd take NIU and do quite well, move them to the Big 12 or something, or Big 10, move them up there. But these are just pie in the sky fun ideas. But, like, who wouldn't want to have that? Like, if you're a team that's at the bottom, it's like, oh, crap, we're 2-10, but we get to play this other team. Plus, I don't know if it would be competition disparity, but it would take a couple of cycles to figure it out to make it more even competitive. But that's an idea somebody brought up, and my poor research skills made it sound like a garbage disposal going off for your ears, but it probably did.
Yeah.
But who cares? We talked about it. We have some fun here. But at the end of the day, I think you're correct. Within 5 years, is the conference going to be the same? Probably so, right?
Probably.
Probably. Because we can never say yes or no on this. I think we're going to wrap up here because I am done because I need to write notes better when I'm doing some stuff. But I like what John David Wickard's statements was. Basically, it's a non-story. Because it all comes back to the one line in Yahoo articles, like, oh, they're talking. Well, what does talking mean? It's like we mentioned weeks ago or years ago when we talk about coaching search or coaching stuff. Coach X at school A, I never talked to this school. Side note, my agent talked to them for me. Stuff like that would happen. But that's it for today. We'll come back next week, and we need some more ideas because it's the off season. You mentioned the Hula Bowl coming up. Is that actually a game or just kind of a you're invited like the Senior Bowl is?
I think they're actually doing it, if I'm not mistaken.
All right, so we'll get to the Hula Bowl stuff next
week. They say it's going to be on January 31st, and they say I think it's supposed to be on CBS Sports.
Okay, well, we'll keep an eye on that. And so have there been – okay, I'm going to put you in a spot here. Have there been Mountain West players invited yet?
Yes. I know that there has been at least two or three. But I have to go back and I have to double check rosters.
All right. I have one roster here. I'll mention one player, Parker Ferguson Air Force. That's the first name that comes
up. There you go.
So we'll talk about that going forward, some NFL draft stuff. And I'll be more coherent once we get past that 40-minute mark. Okay, Matt?
There you go.
All right. Check us out, MWR.com. Go leave a review and subscribe and tell Jeremy to write notes better because that's what I need to do on some of this stuff. But we're having fun. It's all good. And we'll see you in about a week, right? Is that our plan?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see you next time. About a week. See ya.